You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, and we have a ton of stuff to get to today. But before I tell you what we're going to get to today, I'm going to lob over to Adam and say, Adam, you are the football guy here. Please talk everyone's sadness down about the Colts before we get going.
Well, the sadness down is that the Pacers are 28-14 and are on pace to win 54 games now. I don't know. Strength of schedule-wise, we can look at that later. That's something I want to write about at some point.
538 has them projected at 50.
Okay, so projected at 50 wins. You move on to that. And then, I don't know, the Colts played terrible yesterday, but it's of course on Sunday, obviously, so that's for yesterday, Saturday. But, you know, the team's got a good future, so.
Very bright future.
We'll look back, you know, March. Look to March. See what happens in free agency. But overall, let's move on to the Pacers because they're actually playing well. This team is going to make a second-round run just like the Colts. So, let's be sure. They're the team, you know, pour all that hope you had for the Colts into this Pacer team and what could be a more open Eastern Conference than in most years. So, I don't know. We'll talk more about it, but this could be a good year for the Pacers in terms of playoff run. They could be the team that makes it farther than their counterpart in the NFL, which is kind of rare most times.
So today we have a lot. We're going to go back through the road trip, talk about expectations of the trip, how they did against that. More Miles Turner not playing stuff, even though I kind of like Scott Agnes's tweet made me feel like he's not super ready, but then Jay Michael seemed like he was super ready for Tuesday. So we'll see what's going on there. Adam wants to talk about some fun trade free agency stuff. And then we'll preview the week ahead. So a lot to get to. But let's start with the road trip that was. My good friend, Mr. Victor Olajeo on Twitter, dropped a poll right before the road trip and said, how many games do you expect the Pacers to win? And I chose three, and I'm happy I chose three because they won three. So I would say they met expectations, but it was just like a lot of weird games, and I want to feel out how you are feeling about how they did in those five games.
So they beat the teams they were supposed to beat and lost the games that we weren't surprised they lost. They lost by more than they should have in two of those games.
Yes.
But then you throw in the factor of Turner's injury, and I get it that Kawhi didn't play Sunday. And did somebody not play for Boston, too? No, I guess Boston was really healthy.
No, Boston was healthy, yeah.
Right? But, I mean, and then you look at the Boston game was, what, four games in five nights? And so that loss is more explainable when you kind of take from a bigger picture. Like, I know in the moment – you look like at Boston news stuff, they were saying, oh, the Celtics are back. They just beat a decent NBA team by 28 points or 27 points. But it's like, well, it was kind of a scheduled loss, a back-to-back without one of their top three players. I mean, it's a lot of things factoring in that one that makes them lose that game. But overall, you know, they took care of business, and that's kind of the point. They took care of the teams they should have. They didn't lose anything that's like, oh, like they could have lost Chicago, and that would have been really, really bad, another really bad loss. So they took care of business, and you know, hopefully Turner gets back to that later and they can kind of keep rolling, I guess, and beat every kind of roll through all the bad teams at least.
Given that they don't, you know, they're not known for scoring a ton of points every game. I don't know exactly what their points per game is anymore. I think it's like 108. I think the fact that they scored so well in all these games, you know, outside of the Raptors game, they were over their average every game. They had a pretty good offensive trip. But clearly, you know, we both talked about on our own individual shows the impact that missing Turner had. Their defense was a little lacking. Their lowest they gave up was 106 to the Knicks, which is still not very good.
But the Celtics game, or not the Celtics one, the Bulls one is kind of a bad game, right? How many they give in regulation to the
overtime.
Bulls?
That one went to overtime, too.
So how many they give to the Bulls in regulation? Like 106?
Hang on, I got it. It was 14-11 in overtime, so 105.
Okay, so that was the lowest they gave up in regulation.
That's true. Good point. I feel stupid now. That was a better point. That game was awesome. I know that like they messed around and honestly didn't deserve to win if you ask me in that game, but just the shootout of back-to-back three after three after three down the stretch with Levine and Oladipo and Miles was just insane.
It was a fun game. I mean, I was on vacation that week and I was kind of following my phone, watching on my phone. Like if it gets close, I'll obviously put on the TV at the fourth quarter, and then I got close, I watched it. I'm like, oh, this is like pretty fun to watch. My family's with me. We're all watching it. It's like just really exciting game to watch, even though you look at it like the Bulls have won, what, 10 games this year? So it's like you took a 10-win team to overtime. Probably still should have lost. If Levine had 2/10 of a more second, he would have won.
That was insane. But like for both teams, though, that game was fun, and both teams got the result they wanted. So I don't feel like anyone's sad about that.
No, and it was one of the signature Vic games we've had few of this year. And that's kind of, I guess, where I would go next on this whole road trip, where if you looked at Vic's stats this season, and he's just having kind of a
different,
different year is the right way to put it, but not, he's not having like a fantastic year overall. Actually,
under 20 points a game now after the Knicks game. Can you believe that?
It's not even the points a game that really I'm concerned about. It's the shooting splits that are really kind of
yeah
great. 44 and 35.
Wilfer just wrote about this. Yeah, for he was grading everyone's like we're at the halfway point. We didn't even do a halfway point thing. So this is kind of a halfway point for us. He was grading everybody's performance at the halfway point. He gave Oladipo like a C minus because he was comparing it to the before the season expectations and like. Sure, Vic's been really good on D still and has his clutch moments, but overall, 44% shooting, like you just said, below 35% from three, his free throws aren't going in. Like he's doing a lot of other stuff better than he's ever done before, but his shooting splits are not great.
And there's, I mean, is it, I'm trying to think, is it one or two games that you've lost because he couldn't make a free throw? Right? Mm-hmm. It was definitely the Cavs game he lost.
Definitely in that first Cavs
game. Game
they had two or three games where they just like miss a ton of free throws.
And I get he's not going to win every game, but that's the kind of game where you can't lose a Cavs game because you don't make free throws. You can lose because the other guy beats you on a credible three. Like
if they end up like tying with a team and losing a tiebreaker for playoff seeding, we're going to look back at that Cavs game as like a turning point of the year.
Yeah. But and the thing is they made up for his down year with, I mean, you got Thaddeus Young who's now shooting 53% from the field and Bojan is shooting 50-45. I think it can't be understated enough that how good Bojan and Thad, or maybe overstated is the right word there, I don't know, that those two guys have really, and even Turner, when he was been healthy, have elevated their games to like really a level where Vic was playing at his top 20 level last year. This team could be the one seed at this moment.
Well, and if you want to look at a flip side, and I don't know if anyone's done a ton of research on this, it's like, how much is Vic seeing these different coverages that are kind of limiting him, helping those guys be so much better?
But then the point is then he should become, and he's starting to do that a little bit with his assist numbers are kind of up over since his injury. He needs to just become less of a shooter, I guess. He needs to sort of just be like, I'm going to pass out of everything except the end of games when they know they need me, and I'm going to just try to set myself up at like specific moments and not like, because I know he does four shots, it feels like, and that's kind of the most annoying part of his game, I guess.
Yeah, it's like when he gets frustrated, he goes battering ram. So in December, he averaged 7 assists a game. Like, he's clearly gotten to that level of somewhat deferring when he knows he needs to, but not quite all the way. And it's hard to find the right balance for a guy who's clearly a star, and like, he's going to be an all-star still. He's a very good player. It's just, it's different. And this road trip, we saw a lot of that.
Yeah, and so, like, I mean, think about it. If you take the Pacers 1 through, let's say, 7, but minus Collison, who's not been – he's been okay. But, I mean, you really take their, like, 1 through 7 with, let's say, Corey Joseph is the point guard and then Domas, the first guy off the bench. I mean, there are not a lot of teams that have a better 1 through 6
than
those guys. And so, I mean, this will kind of lead into later when we talk about some trades that I should in. But, like, really that 1 through 6 where if you put Joseph in the starting lineup, he closes most games. And Domas, those are six guys where in the playoffs you're, like – you're going to ride each of those six guys for as many minutes as you can. And you have the ability to kind of adjust some lineups to make it fit. So you can go three guards at one time and place a bonus to turn together. You can place a bonus and turn off the bench. You can do kind of a couple different things. You can move Bojan to the four and the three guard lineups. Like, you have a little versatility there and you've got six guys who you really trust to play defense in the playoffs and to score if they're not even good. And so I don't know. It seems like if Vic can get to this like efficiency level of where like he's like maybe not 50-40 because that's
not reasonable.
That's reasonable, but like let's say 47-37, which is kind of where he was last year, I think, right? That's about
exactly where he was last year, 48-37.
Okay. Yeah, if you get to that level, then this team has this potential of, I think, Eastern Conference final to run.
Yeah, and it's crazy because I was having some realizations about that on the road trip too. It's like, since they are so balanced and we're seeing less out of Vic, you know. Maybe that's what this team is now. Maybe if he can find the right balance of shots, because he still does that one where he doesn't get the foul call, so he takes a pull up three on the next possession kind of shots. Like, if he finds the right balance, I think they have a level like one click above where they peaked in December.
Well, and I think too, this team reminds me kind of like some of those old Pacer teams in the 2012-13 era, except the one difference is I think Vic is more clutch than any one of those guys in those Pacers teams back then. Yeah. And that's no shot at Paul George or Roy Hibbert, whatever. But like, Vic has an uncanny ability to hit big shots and big moments in a way that just a third or fourth year Paul George didn't have, or Roy Hibbert had, or David West had. And so that's kind of the difference of why this team legitimately has a shot at making a playoff run, because if you go to a game 7 and you're tied in the last 2 minutes, I trust Vic to beat almost any other. I mean, Kyrie's up there on his level, but like, he's beaten Kyrie a couple times at the end of games. Like, I trust him to be able to beat the other team and win the game for them.
I agree.
Like, he's as good as any player in this league at being clutch in games.
I agree. So you want to talk about Miles?
Yeah, I think we should, because that's kind of also been this, a lot of the issues this whole
from the road trip
gonna be fixed once he comes back.
Yeah, they gave up a bleep ton of points, and we both did our own little things about it, because it has to be hammered in how, like, when you can see how important he is when he's not there, and that's kind of the worst way to find out. But you know, you really saw it when it's not like Sabonis just is like a little click too slow around the rim sometimes, and all this stuff that just like compounds on itself. You know, you just really miss having one of the best defensive players under the basket at all times.
Yeah, and it's not even the fact that Sabonis, because I think Sabonis offensively brings a little more, so that's where he counters.
Oh, way more. Kind of, yeah, oh yeah.
Well, Adam Turner, when he's making his three-point shot, Turner.
He's up to 39% this year. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to knock Turner's offense through the past month. I mean, it's been incredible. But, like, Sabonis kind of makes up for that less, his defense not being as good with a better offense.
Right. I don't want to deny that.
But the biggest thing with Turner not being there is the lineup versatility. I mean, it's the ability to go big when you need to. Like, the Knicks game, like, I mean, from far away, it's like, you don't need Turner. It's the Knicks because they play all traditional bigs. You can just play both. You just play Sabonis for every minute and let him just back guys down and score points, and that's what he did. But, like, against the Celtics, you need Turner because you need a guy who can bring Horford away from kind of closing off driving lanes and stuff like that. You need a guy who can kind of guard Horford on the perimeter sometimes too. So that's the issue there. And then also you miss that huge bench boost. You know, Sabonis coming off the bench just gives you, like, instant offense coming off the bench nonstop. So it's not the fact even that Turner is, like, the Pacers, like, best player. It's the fact that when he is playing, he, like, kind of makes everything fit together and lock into, like, a really good kind of form, I guess.
Right. And it's not even that, like Kyle Quinn is bad for the bench. It's just, like, the drop from Sabonis to him is so big. Now,
what do you expect? I mean, Sabonis and Turner are what, top 50, 60 players, and Kyle Quinn probably isn't even on a roster in the next year, give or take.
Kyle maybe Quinn's is definitely on a roster next year.
Okay, so he's what, maybe in the 300 to 400th ranked best player in the NBA.
Never expands beyond his role of, like, a reserve big man ever.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard to find that third big man when you have two big men who are like two of the best big men in the league.
Two top 15 centers on the court at all times.
Yeah. I mean, Sabonis is probably, I mean, I think he's sixth man of the year, and he's probably the best backup center in the NBA a mile.
Easily. Easily.
Yeah. And he's probably maybe the best bench player in the NBA. He's up there, in my opinion, sixth man of the year.
Yeah. He's right there. He's right up there. And we've strayed away from our Turner defense discussion, but this is still important stuff. Like, I guess we're still talking about the missing him impact. You know, you just see it now that he's gone, and that's the worst way to find out. But going forward, I think we'll have an appreciation for the things he offers. Even when he's missing outside shots, you know, it's just pulling someone away from the rim ever so slightly more, or the just little tiny things that just reshape the game for the lineups. And what we also saw is fit stuff is, like, Turner fits really well with the five guys that start, and Sabonis fits really well with the bench guys who need that creator with them. So much so that's why they're so good when everyone's healthy.
And I think too, we underestimated, because last year the defense was built, I think, more around Thaddeus Young and Oladipo in terms of the entire defense
pounding
was
guys,
pounding guys and closing out passing lanes. I mean, the deflection stats last year and the steal stats were ridiculous, but this year's defense has been built more around Turner's rim protection and his ability to switch, where they can switch things with Turner and they're not screwing anymore because Turner's gotten really good at perimeter defense in a sense. So, I mean, I think we kind of forgot, like, he hasn't been great. Okay. Maybe not been fantastic perimeter D, but he's been reliable.
Well, when I think of his perimeter D, to me, it's like what drop coverage does is he is containing the entire pick and roll by himself right after it happens. And that is so hard to do, and so few big men can do that. And he allows the guard to then recover, and you shut it down, whereas Sabonis, that doesn't happen as much. And that's a really hard skill. I don't want to knock Sabonis for not having it. Like, 90% of centers cannot do what Turner does.
It's a skill that took Turner all offseason to develop.
Three and a half years to get there. Exactly. You know, it's insanely hard to do, and he's done so well at that it just stifles, like, the common action that every single team runs. To have a guy that can do that so well is so crazy.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think the defense, too, you agree, is built more around Turner this season than it was last year, for sure. And that's where you notice it. The defense just, you're kind of missing the guy I'm assuming Dan Burke has kind of drawn the entire defense to kind of revolve around his movement and what happens with him, essentially.
I agree. Yes. Do you want to switch to your topic?
Yeah, you want to take a quick break and then do it?
Oh, I think we should. We should have done it before this one. Yeah, so let's take a quick break, and then Adam will be leading the next discussion for us. So Adam is going to surprise me. He would not tell me what his fancy schmancy little roster maneuvers are here that he has. So Adam, please lay it on me.
All right. So I think this is going to be a weekly thing. I know you're against it, but we're going to do now until the trade deadline. We'll do a weekly.
We should. I agree.
10 minute free agency corner, 5-10 minutes, give or take. I mean, I don't know. We'll see how this one goes.
You're right. So, okay. Well, when this comes out, I'm going to do a preface here. When this comes out, the 15th is the day that every single player in the NBA can be traded. Because that is
December 15th of that date.
No, January 15th is the day the full bird rights guys can be traded. December is when the summer can.
Okay.
So tomorrow, literally every player besides like Kevin Love, who signed an extension, can be traded in 8 days after that. But literally every player can be traded. So it's time. It's trade deadline time.
Yeah. And it's in to set some guidelines, this is going to be about trades in February. There's no going to be talk about free agent signings or stuff like that. Like, I'm not going to do that. It's specifically trades players can make at the February deadline to improve the roster. And so I'll bring up one or two every week. Let's ever take it. What kind
of,
okay, as I see.
I will let you think of them unless I think of one that I think is a home run. Because okay. I thought of one total this whole trade deadline season that I kind of like.
And I'm the one I'm about to say is probably the one that you like.
Ooh, okay.
So I'm guessing I would like the move of probably Tyreke Evans for Jeremy Lin and maybe a second rounder straight up.
I don't think they could get the extra second there, but yes.
Something. No, the Pacers give up the second round picks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so there you go.
They attach second rounder to Tyreke Evans to get Lin.
Yes, the Hawks are actually a team that with Bazemore too. There are a lot of moves with the Hawks that make some sense. And well, yes,
the Hawks are tanking and they want Zion Williamson, I'm assuming, to play with Trey Young. Sorry, I could blink on his name.
That's good. Adam, I like that. That you know, it's hard to gauge Tyreke's value for me right now. Because so the reason I like that, sorry, I'll back up, is because I like the idea of getting an expiring back just so you don't screw up your future plans while still probably improving the team this year. My gauging, what I was about to say is it's hard for me to gauge Tyreke's value just because I don't know how much his reputation and last year has to do with his value versus like he's just been so underwhelming, to put a euphemism on it, this season.
So my thing with the Hawks too, I don't think you're really trading a value for a value. You're just trading. You're just the Hawks. You're just giving the Hawks an asset.
Yeah.
So because they're looking crappy at tanking
because it had to be protected against the Brooklyn protections.
Yeah. Or what, I mean, well, you figure out second round. You have a future one, whatever it is. You figure out second round picks. I mean, you can buy those if you really want a second round pick. But you do that, and what you're helping the Hawks essentially do is tank. I mean, you're just saying, hey, we'll take the player who's adding value to your team right now that you don't want to add value to your team, and we'll take him. We'll give you a second rounder in exchange for it.
Can I throw you another Hawks trade someone sent to me, actually?
Yeah, that's fine.
Let me find it. I didn't think of this one. I kind of do like it, though. Ben Jones, one of my best friends from college. We talk basketball all the time. Okay, it's a three-teamer, so it's kind of going to be complicated. Okay, the Hawks get Brandon Knight from the Rockets and Tyreke from the Pacers. The Rockets get Kent Bazemore and Doug McDermott. And the Pacers get Eric Gordon, Torian Prince, and Vince Carter. And then the Hawks also get a Pacers first-round pick. So the Pacers send out Tyreke, McDermott, and a first, and they get Eric Gordon, Vince Carter, and Torian Prince.
I'm not ready to give up on Doug McDermott yet.
I'm not either.
I think Tyreke's the problem there, not Dougie.
Yeah, I don't think that's awful value-wise. It's just like – and you pull in Eric Gordon, which everybody would love.
Yeah, but he's in the down year, isn't he?
I don't think the Hawks give – yeah, very – I don't think the Hawks give up Prince, and I don't want to give up McDermott and a first to kind of move the needle a little. But it's not bad. The Hawks seem like a team that there are some fits with trades. So I like that as a good starting point.
I think the Hawks – I think you got to look at like six teams that want to really make trades, and those are teams that are terrible. Bad and trying to remain bad. There are six teams. And so, I mean, that's it. There are five in the East, give or take, and then there's the Suns.
Yeah.
Everybody else is in the playoffs. Nobody's gonna give up. No one wants to give up stuff right now, at least in the trade deadline. You know, maybe.
Well, that's why the next half month is important, because if teams suck the next half of the month and I know they're out of it, they'll.
Yeah, but the West is so competitive. I'm not sure you're gonna know in a month.
Well, the team that I know you're about to throw for the second trade is the team that I'm thinking of. That if they fall out, they could be very clearly on the rebuild path.
Yeah, because they don't have their pick is top five protected.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that.
But I just want to say on the Jeremy Lin thing. One, I think he fits too. I think that's the key here. Where. I'm not sure Tyreke really fits with this team. And Jeremy Lin, I feel like on the fly can come in and at least provide some positive benefit off the bench. It still blocks Aaron Holiday's growth. So that's an issue. And you're still not really
going to. I'm more comfortable blocking Aaron Holiday's growth with a player who will help with a player.
Right. And so
player who barely helps.
We were talking about it, right? The Pacers have six guys who we trust in the playoffs. Then there's Darren Collison, McDermott and Evans, right? Those are the next three. And I'm not sure I trust any of those three guys in the playoffs as much as I trust their top six from Corey Joseph, Sabonis, and the rest of the starting four. And so you're trying to add to that six. You need like probably seven or eight guys to really compete in the playoffs. You don't need more than that. But if you have seven, and Lane, I feel like, is a guy who can be a seventh quality guy, and then maybe you're relying on McDermott or Collison, whatever, to be the eighth. But that's what you're kind of looking at, I feel like, with those players.
Yeah, Jeremy Lin does Tyreek's role too, where he'd be handling the ball, which is good. You can still have Corey Joseph do his herky-jerky stuff, which works enough.
And you're not disturbing the team chemistry.
Exactly.
Yep. I think you're kind of giving up an asset who nobody likes anyway. I mean, I don't say that the right way, but nobody that doesn't fit in, really.
I think they like Tyreek as a guy.
Yeah, I think basketball-wise, he doesn't fit, and I'm not sure he's not like been with this team for 2 years and been part of that growth that like every guy on last year's team feels like they have something together and all that stuff.
Let's do your second trade.
All right. So this one's a little more radical, and this is disrupting that core. Ooh. And you Ooh. Probably could tell who I'm thinking of trading away, because I kind of have given away a couple times. But I think a move I'd like to see, especially if this team, like you hinted, goes into kind of tank mode, and that is with the Dallas Mavericks to trade for Harrison Barnes. And simply on the expectation that you know he's probably going to pick up his player option. So the Mavs would be willing to trade him because they want to clear the cap space. Because the Mavs feel like they can get a free agent, whatever the hell they think out there. I'm not sure they can give him. They feel they can get a top whatever free agent. And Harrison Barnes is a quality player. Yeah, he makes a lot more money than he probably should make for the stats he puts up. But you overpay him, whatever it is. But you give up, let's say, Darren Collison, Tyreek, and I think Kyle Quinn gets you there, money-wise.
I like Harrison Barnes. But I don't know how much he fits with the Pacers, because did you know he has more turnovers than assists this year?
Okay.
He does not ever, ever pass the ball, like ever.
Well, okay,
he's a good shooter. 41% from three this year on a pretty good volume of attempts. He can kind of score. He's long enough to be competent enough on D in the way that Tyreek is, even though he is what he is. But he's just like not a ball mover. And I don't want to give Tyreek up for another ball stopper.
I guess my thing is, though, you're not putting the ball in his hands, but you put with Tyreek.
I would hope.
Right? Well, you're kind of putting Barnes in the corner, essentially. You're running. You're not, like, relying him.
You want to pay $22 million for a guy to stick him in the corner?
Well, I mean, if he's the eighth guy in your playoff rotation, is that really good? Are you really good, then, as an NBA team?
I don't know.
That's how I look at it, I guess.
That's like, fine, I guess.
And this is the same thing where I say – the cap space the Pacers have is kind of fake cap space.
It is totally fake.
So like
they have
like
so Harrison, many that it's not real space.
Yeah. So what is Harrison Barnes worth in the open market? Realistically, 15 probably.
10 to 15.
Right, 10 to 15. So you're paying about $10 million more for an extra. Like I'm assuming they pay with player option. I would doubt he doesn't. I mean,
that absolutely, 100%.
So that's why the Mavs would do, because they wanted to get rid of that player option so that they can go after a free agent, which would make sense for them, especially if they're going to. They want to tank too. Part of it would be that too, but
build around Luka.
Yeah, I just feel like he, as an eighth guy on your roster, he could be really good. He's in some insurance. If Bojan, I think you're going to be at Bojan at this rate, and he's playing so well. But in case Bojan leaves, you basically play a lineup of what? Aaron Holiday, Sabonis, him, McDermott, and pick whoever you want to be kind of the fifth player in that lineup.
Right, but that's a good lineup. Here's my shocker: Harrison Barnes never passes the ball stat. Are you ready?
All right, I'm ready.
Doug McDermott has a higher assist percentage than Harrison Barnes.
I've never seen McDermott pass the ball in my life.
Doug McDermott has a 6.3 assist percentage. Harrison Barnes has 5.5. Doug McDermott.
Well, but like with Barnes, I guess you just don't put the ball in his hands as much. You let him just shoot.
Like Barnes can pass to Luka and Dennis Smith and Wes Matthews, like some okay play finishers, and he has a 5.5 assist percentage. That's so bad.
I understand.
I like him as a scorer. I really do. He's a good player. It's kind of risky on the fit side for me.
Yeah, it's a risky move, but it's probably the kind of move where if it pays off, it might win you second round series.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that's where it gives you the eighth guy off your – it gives you your seventh rotation guy of real quality, and it makes McDermott maybe play better too.
The takeaway that we – the thesis you should gather from this, listeners, going forward, is that on this segment every week we will think of trading away Tyreek. For some.
Yeah, I mean, that's the move. I mean, Tyreek is the move right now.
Yeah. It is. It probably is.
He didn't play for a week, and I don't think anybody noticed.
I'm going to slide something in here. TJ Leaf proving that he might not actually be a negative value guy.
Well, they have him next year already, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, some team might bite on that. All right, want to preview the week ahead, or you got anything else in this section?
I think those were the two trades. They're interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll think of some for next week. Now that I know we're doing this, this will be good.
Yeah.
All right, we got a busy week ahead, so we'll just jump right on it after a quick break. Adam, the Phoenix Suns are terrible.
Yes, that's a shocking to me. That's a I'm shocked by that statement.
There, the Panthers week is very funny to me. They got the crappy Suns, and then they're on national TV against the Sixers, and then they're down for Luka Mania, and then now back-to-back against Kemba. It's like, besides the Suns, the whole week has headlines for just very different reasons. And the Suns game is just like, blah. It's just there.
So you want to know how bad the Suns are?
Yeah, I would love to know how bad the Suns
are. They're 27th in both offensive and defensive rating.
Oh, geez. And they're not even worse than the Cavs. They're better than the Cavs, which is amazing. Who the beat the Pacers at home? So maybe we're glossing over the Suns.
I don't know. I don't know about that one. The Cavs caught the Pacers on a weird night.
I know that was okay. Yes, I just pulled up the Suns numbers, but I will pivot and pull up the Sixers numbers while we keep talking.
It's also worth noting they did take the Pacers to the last second in Phoenix. So
they didn't play poorly when these two teams met in Phoenix earlier this season.
Pacers let teams hang around on them. I mean, that's obvious, I think, right?
Yeah, they definitely do. But the Suns are pretty much just Devin Booker and some like pieces that are young. But isn't Booker dealing with some stuff right now? He just missed their game against the Nuggets with a back injury, and I don't know how much they'll be willing to rush him back in a season that they're clearly tanking. So, I mean, I'm guessing he'll play, but you never know. And if he doesn't play, they have nothing going on.
Oh, if he doesn't play, this is game over.
Game over, yeah. But yeah, they actually, you know what? I'm going to walk that one back. They beat the Nuggets without him, so.
They did?
They won 102-93 in Denver.
I got to look at this box score. I did not realize that. I missed that game.
I might walk that one back right after saying it. Now they're going to lose.
Let's see. Box score-wise, DeAndre Ayton had 22 points. And then, Kelly Oubre had a really good game.
Oubre's been playing well for them. Yeah, they're a different team the first time they played.
Kelly Oubre might appear in one of our trade segments.
I don't know why the Suns would give him up, but.
Well, we'll talk later. Well, this is not right
week,
now.
Next week. Yeah, they don't have Ariza anymore, who they had the first time, and Ariza was playing like a ton of minutes for them. So pretty savvy move for them to soak up Kelly Oubre in that move. Oubre's been good for them. He has 2 26-point games for them. That's pretty crazy. Other than that, TJ Warren will score some points. Ayton will grab some rebounds and score some points and play the worst defense you've ever seen around the basket. And everyone else is like a young piece. So that's the Suns.
Warren is usually the pretty solid like fantasy go-to guy who puts up like 18 a game.
Same with Ayton. Ayton's a really good fantasy guy.
Yeah, but like Warren's always asleep because nobody knows who he is if you're not like really paying attention to basketball because he's on a crappy team and he's putting up not like eyeball popping stats, but like good stats, you know, good fantasy stats. So he's always that kind of player. Ayton's always fun to watch.
Ayton is fun to watch.
We'll see if Turner plays and how that affects Ayton.
Yeah, that's the question mark on this game. So, I should have pulled these up. Sky Agnes and Jay Michael were at practice today. So Jay Michael's phrasing was Turner practiced today, expected to go on Monday, and likely to play versus Suns on Tuesday, which you read that and you're like, okay, cool. Miles Turner's going to play in this game. Scott Agnes, same thing. Miles Turner practiced today for the first time in over a week. A decision has not been made yet about Tuesday's game. He says the pain stems from nerves and is unpredictable.
So let's see. Who do you think has better information, the Athletic guy or the Indy Star, too? The powerhouse.
They both probably got it at the same time from the same person, too. So,
well, Agnes sounds more like he talked to Turner directly, where Michael sounds like he talked to like McMillan, is what it's like.
I don't know. So who knows is my answer on the reporting there. The first time these two teams played, everyone on the Suns had a plus minus between +7 and -4. And then Trevor Ariza had a -20. He was apparently horrible in that game. I don't even remember him being that horrible, but, on the Pacers side, if you'll recall, pretty balanced attack. That was an Evans started game. So they didn't have Vic. That's probably why it was closer than it should have been. But Sabonis had 21, and that was the McDermott game, if you'll recall. 5 3-pointers for McDermott.
That's the game where Turner played really good at the end, too. He had a great pass to Collison.
Yes, he played three good possessions in a row at the end of that game. Yeah,
it was the first time. I was like, this is the start, right? This is the start of the Turner. Yep. Like, oh, it's December. December
run. No, this was like mid. This was very late November. You're right. I'm sorry. 27th.
This is like right bubbling up. Oh, he's kind of hit a. Because he flipped the switch. I think the next week was that when he had that big game against the Wizards, was the following Monday.
Yes. So they had a really balanced scoring attack. Add Vic to that, I think they'll have no problem. That's my take on this game.
Yeah,
TJ Leaf was a +13 in 8 minutes in that first time they played.
So my only thing is I want Turner to play simply because of what it means for the next game. I think he needs to get some minutes under him before the next game because I could see him playing this game and only playing, like, let's say 15, 20 minutes and letting Sabonis kind of really you know, play the chunk of the game. But I just think he needs to get, needs to play to get back into some, because it takes him, it always takes Turner two or three games to get back in game form after these injuries. Mm-hmm. I think he can probably
tell him that bowl game that he wasn't ready yet because of not practicing that week too.
Right. He can still, he's, his shoulder is not putting him in conditioning, right? It's preventing him from like shooting and stuff like that.
Yeah. He did not shoot very many times or well against that Bulls team.
Man, he just has the weirdest injuries. And I don't know if it's bad luck or what. I just, it stinks.
Yeah.
It stinks because, like, that was the problem last year, right? He could never get going. And this year, he finally got going for 5 weeks. Then he got, and he broke his nose and got,
apparently, they were on the same play. Apparently, that shoulder injury happened on the same play. I didn't know that.
And it's just weird. Like, those are just weird injuries. You know what I mean? He just said, like, he doesn't have, like, the twisted ankle or the,
right.
Or, like, the bruised knee. It's like, yeah, I'm going to throw my elbow on a dunk. I'm going to get hit by a ball in the head, or elbow in the head. I'm going to get my nose get broken because the guy insane. Turned the wrong way on
me. Like, remember last year he hurt his elbow. Yeah, that ridiculous dunk. It's like, of course. You had a sick play and you got hurt. That sucks.
He hurt his UCL, which is like literally the most common baseball pitcher injury, but I think it might have been like the third one in the NBA in maybe 10 years.
It was nuts. Can we skip Butchers? Because if Booker plays, it's Booker. And if Booker doesn't play, it's Ayton. And we're done there.
Hey, Warren's playing well, dude.
That's true. That is true. I regret not including TJ Warren in that discussion.
But yeah, I think Oubre could be a Butcher off the bench too. I don't know.
Yeah, I just don't want to talk about Suns players playing well because none of them ever really are awesome. But we'll hear more about the Suns tomorrow. I already have my guest book for that. So
all right, so you can do that. I think they win this game by 20. Turner playing or not playing.
Yeah, Sabonis can beat up on any of their bigs because he's a very, very good offensive player, and none of their bigs are good on D.
This like, would be like the Knicks game, very similar.
He had 21-16 last time they played. He's just going to eat alive in this game.
Similar to the Knicks game because they don't have like a stretchy bit.
Yep, I am with you on that. I'm with you. Vic Beck plus maybe Turner plus maybe no Booker. Yeah, the Suns are not looking good.
The most exciting game of the week because I'm this is like
yeah national TV time. Let's talk Sixers. Adam, I want to tell you something.
Yes,
the Sixers last two games are losses to the Wizards and Hawks.
Who's isn't like everybody hurt? I was looking at their
yeah, they have six guys on the injury report. Jimmy Butler day to day, Joel Embiid day to day, Markelle Fultz obviously has toss, Amir Johnson day to day, Justin Patton's out, Zaire Smith's out. They're missing quite a few guys.
There's already a team that's kind of not so deep.
They're playing the Knicks, I think, right now, actually. And
they're playing as we speak.
I think they're playing as we speak. I should look that up. But I think Embiid and Butler are both playing in this game.
They're down
on the Knicks in the fourth. Oh. Do you have different
sports? No, sorry. I just refreshed. Yeah, they're up two in the fourth.
Oh, wow. I see 86-82. What do you see?
Oh, I see 84-82. Damn, my computer's slow.
Okay, well, the Sixers are about to score. It's 86-82 right now, but Jimmy Butler and Embiid are playing, so I don't think those injuries are anything to worry about for them in this game. National TV, though, which is always fun. Yeah, they've won one against the Sixers and lost one, so you never really know what to expect with
the Sixers. But Jimmy beat him by last time.
That is true. That is true.
They haven't played Jimmy Butler team yet. Actually, they didn't. I think they
did. They played him on the Wolves. Or did he miss that game too?
No, he played that one this year. He missed both last year though.
I was gonna say they played him earlier this year, I thought.
They haven't played Jimmy Butler on this team yet.
Right, right. I thought the first time they played when they didn't have Jimmy yet, I thought that it was the home game. I thought they matched up pretty poorly. Now I think that the Sixers are a little shallower. I think the Pacers match up a little better, but they still just have three incredible players. So it's always a tough game with them.
Yeah, they need Turner, obviously.
Yes. This is the game they need him back with Embiid stretchiness.
I mean, last time they did a really good job of exploiting Embiid on defense. I mean, mm-hmm. they put him in every pick and roll. I think for some reason he was guarding Thad and so at some point.
Paramount.
And they just they double teamed Vic and Vic just got to Thad every time. I mean, it was pure clinic. I mean, it seemed like out there in that whole fourth quarter when they made a mini run to come back, the Sixers mm-hmm. did. So that's where like Embiid from his stats wise, good defensive player, but if you just watched him against the Pacers, he's a terrible defensive player, right?
I mean, he's a very good defensive player.
I mean, I know he is, but like what? He had the game where he got schooled by Al Jefferson. He's had Vic strung a couple times. Like
that if you was just, so amazing.
Like if you're a Pacer fan, you only just watch the Pacers, you think Embiid's not a good defender. He can't guard it. He can't guard any Pacer players.
Yeah, no, they just run him through so much stuff that like he's going to have some mistakes, but he also does so much good stuff.
Yeah, but they destroyed him last time in Philly. I mean, they just made him look. I mean, there were a couple of times. I mean, Turner was.
Embiid, they were, yeah. They were well, okay. So It's also like some of centered defense is about having good perimeter defenders, right? Like,
yes, 100%.
Sometimes it's hard for Turner when Darren Collison just gets beat. You know, he has to move that he didn't expect to. So Furkan Korkmaz started for Jimmy Butler. Like, that was some of Embiid's struggles was right there.
Yes, no, that's 100% fair, 100%. But I mean, I guess Butler would have been on Oladipo then, that would have been a lot different.
Yeah. I don't think you're wrong in anything. I'm just pointing out that defending behind Furkan Korkmaz and Jimmy Butler is like the
biggest problem. Right. You're 100% right. And that's why, honestly, I think this is a it's your boy type of game.
My boy. Yes, sir. He had 18 last time they played. With Korkmaz on him, they're going to need him to be that secondary creator just because the Sixers have great perimeter defenders. And another guy that I am going to be staring at to have another good game, if you'll recall, Thad Young had 26 and 10.
Yes, I remember that.
8-9 from the line, a rare Thad making every free throw game.
That is having a fantastic year, and he's working himself into a nice, nice contract this
summer. Oh, yes, he good for him, man. I love Thad.
I love his wife's Twitter. It's kind of
she's best. Awesome. I'm glad they just opened a business. That's super exciting.
In Memphis, so you know, watch out. You could be with Grizzlies next year.
Oh yeah, you sent me the video of that. I won't tell everyone your caption, but you did send me the video of them opening that business. So yeah, Thad's key. Just I feel like in any game against a bunch of stars because he can guard. I mean, Embiid might be a little too large for him, but he can guard anybody. So he's just always key when he can guard. He can guard Simmons. He can guard Butler. He could guard Wilson Chandler for him too. He can shut down Redick on switches. You know, he can just do everything, and that's so huge. And last time they played, if you'll recall, Turner got a bunch of foul trouble. Embiid took 16 free throws. I mean, everybody was complaining about the whistle.
Embiid had 29 points in the first half, right? Or 28?
Yeah, he finished with 40 and 21, and they lost. That's crazy.
Well, it could bother him play.
Yeah, I know. I got it. So limiting him to less than 40 and 21 could be a key to success.
I mean, his average is 27 and 14 or 13.
God, he is so good, dude. It's insane.
He's really good. If not for Giannis, he'd be the MVP this year, maybe.
Yeah, he's definitely in the top like four or five in that. No, I think Harden's MVP, but.
Oh, yeah. Maybe not Harden, is your part, right?
Yeah. But yeah, he's right up there in the top five. He is insanely good.
I don't know if Harden can sustain this, but that's another question for
another time. He definitely cannot. But to get this is an aside, to get the Rockets from. Like, Zach Lowe stopped what he was doing to do an emergency Are the Rockets Not Actually Good podcast. And all of a sudden, they're going to host a playoff series because James Harden just had this insane run. Like, that is crazy. He's been so good.
That's the superstar you want, a guy who just put you on back and drag your team to the finish line, essentially.
Yeah. But that's kind of what Embiid's doing. But this team, also with the Sixers, you never know with all these personalities what could happen, because it seems like every week now there's some other story about someone griping at somebody else. I think it's overblown to the extent of like, we want to make this Jimmy Butler's ripping them apart thing. Maybe it's not so bad at this point, but there is just little things going on that are clearly happening.
If Jimmy Butler doesn't resign, does this team get set back for like two seasons?
No, they'll have a bunch of space.
Okay, that's fair.
No.
I mean, they're just going to be a lot. I mean, the roster, I mean, I would say Sarge and Covington.
Different. Yeah. It'll definitely be a lot different, but they'll have the space to do something. I don't know what it is, but they'll figure it out.
Well,
they will offer Chris Middleton like a key to the city and every dollar allowed. And
but won't Ben Simmons' extension kick in at some point? Isn't it?
The year after next.
Okay, so they'll be able to.
One year window to throw money at somebody. Yeah, but yeah, they just have like a little tacky stuff going on that you never know what's going on with them. But I just feel like they're really good, and this will be a fun game because this is basically right now, I think it's 3-4 in the East, which is always fun.
Yeah, and I guess with this team, like I said, their weak point is their shooting guard. Their bench and the shooting guard with Redick, at least defensively.
Yeah. Well, their bench, the last time they played with Butler out too, was like Landry Shamet, a rookie, Mike Muscala having a terrible year, Shake Milton, a rookie, and TJ McConnell, who is actually okay, but he's just really short and is limited. So very, very not good bench. And now they're playing like Jonah Bolden at backup center with Amir out and all this stuff. That's just like they have very, very clear weaknesses on the bench, which caters to a good game for Sabonis. But they have a very, very good starting five that they're still working through the kinks of figuring out their minutes.
Well, that's why it's critical Turner plays in this game.
I agree.
I guess you could see – I would love to see Embiid against O'Quinn and screw up how he screwed up something, like the way he screwed up against Jefferson. But, I mean, yeah, this is going to be – can the starters hold enough to allow the bench to take the lead.
To take the lead. Okay, you laugh at O'Quinn here, but he like the Sixers would kill to have that guy over Jonah Bolden right now.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I agree though. That's kind of what made their bread. I don't know what I was trying to just say. But in Philly when they won, Sabonis and Corey Joseph were both +21 and +22 respectively. Like those guys carried the load on the second unit. Well, all the starters were much lower than that.
I mean, I don't think we can overstate how good the Pacers bench is.
Best in the league probably.
Toronto and Boston.
Yeah, the two teams that just beat them.
That's the problem is that they have a good bench, but there's two teams in the East who also have a really good bench, so it kind of negates that, which is going to be kind of interesting in the playoffs. But the Sixers, who are this team that is very top-heavy, going against a couple teams who are not as top-heavy, and how that what happens when you get Dundee, you have to play seven, eight guys, or the Sixers seven guys better than any other team.
Well, they have one of the best benches in the league, way better than the Sixers, and that is how they're going to have to beat this team if they do is – you know, those minutes where Simmons is out, you pick on the center position. And those minutes when Butler's out, you do some stuff on the wing. And those minutes when Simmons is out, you know, you abuse whoever's ball handling in his place. It's just those kind of things are how you beat the Sixers. And some teams have figured it out and other teams haven't. The Pacers did once, so they might have to do it again. But we'll see if Butler plays or not. We'll see if Embiid plays or not. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Pacers are built to beat the Sixers in the regular season. Again, I don't know about the postseason, but this should be a game they should be able to win, especially because it's at home.
Yep.
Assuming all things are healthy, obviously.
Butcher, I'll go Embiid, though.
I'll go Butler's defense.
Yeah, good point. That they have so many interesting ideas because, like, between Butler and Simmons matching up on Bojan and Vic, like, they could just take them out of the game. Like, Thad Young could be the best creator all of a sudden. That would be tough. Yeah.
What they would probably do is just try to run pick and rolls with Thad a bunch. I mean, same thing as last time, right? Or pick and roll with Sabonis a bunch.
Jake Wilson Chandler work is ass off on defense,
basically. Yeah, and Bede's not a great perimeter defender, right? I mean, you could just stretch turnaround and have him shoot a bunch of jump shots to help you make some.
He's all right. I think the Pacers win a close game. I think that Sabonis and Corey Joseph play will be the key, but I think they can win. I think they will win.
Yeah, this is also a game where you keep it close throughout, and then you have to rely on Vic to close it out, which, I don't know, I might take Vic over any as the best closer on this court over Butler or Embiid.
Butler's wild good in the clutch, too, though.
Yeah. I don't know. Oladipo is like an unreal level good in the clutch.
Yes, he really is.
I mean, it's like almost dumbfounding how much he hits clutch 3-point shots. At what point he starts hitting step back threes and pull up threes and 35-foot threes.
The banking into the 35-footer was just ridiculous.
Yes, that was the moment where like, oh, that's right. He's like just doesn't miss in the last minute of the game.
So Adam, let's get the pun out of the way. Hallelujah. It's time for the Pacers to be on Twitter a million times because every time Doncic makes any basket, someone posts a highlight of it, which is really annoying. But he is super, super good and super fun to watch. And that is why Saturday's game will be an absolute treat because Pacers Mavs will be awesome.
Are you able to go to it?
I would think I'll be there, yeah. The Mavs are 18th in offense and 11th in defense. So they're basically right what their record says. They're about an average team.
Don't drool over Luka, just in case, you know,
what?
You're at the game, don't just start like drooling over how awesome he is.
Oh, I won't. I think he's become overrated already by NBA.
I thought you were those guys who are just in love with him.
He's really good. I think he should have been the number one pick, but I'm not just like my God, I saw someone float a take that he's better than Jimmy Butler already this week. I was like, what? Yeah, that was
all over the trade now. He's
terrible. 19. Terrible.
He might be someday for sure.
Oh, yeah.
He's having the Donovan Mitchell type of season where he's just been like awesome.
Yeah, eventually teams will figure out how to cover him.
And then he'll have to adjust, and then we'll see what happens.
He will. So the Mavs outside of him are getting good play from J.J. Barea, but then J.J. Barea just, I think, tore his Achilles all the way. So he'll be out for forever.
Yeah, he did. Tore his Achilles.
When I mean forever, I mean like his career might actually be over forever.
That's sad.
It's so sad. He was awesome.
Yeah, he had a good run.
He was actually a key part of a championship team. You can make fun of J.J. Barea all you want, but he's a good player.
Yeah, he was critical to that 2011 championship.
As we've made fun of, Harrison Barnes does not pass, but he does give them quite a few points every night. Wes Matthews is okay at a lot of stuff. DeAndre Jordan used to be okay at a lot of stuff and now just kind of grabs a bunch of rebounds. And then they have like a bench that Rick Carlisle, which Pacers fans should be too familiar with, cobbles together and somehow makes it work. So it's going to be an interesting game.
Yeah, they lost both times in the Mavs last year.
They did. A joke in the joke of the loss at home, though, right after Christmas. That was terrible.
And the Lance, freaking Lance game.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
But watching both games for Lance's fault, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, this Mavs team, you won't be able to roll over them, let's put it that way. They're not like some of those.
No.
Like even last year when they were bad, you didn't roll over them. But
Ray Carlisle team, they'll never be a pushover.
You did miss one part of his whole matchup.
Dennis Smith?
No, it's the Doug McDermott revenge game, man.
Oh, yeah, it is the Doug McDermott revenge game. That's true. He dunked against the Bulls, and all these Bulls people I follow were like, Doug McDermott is back. I was like, whoa.
Okay. He's been dunking this year a few times.
He dunks like every game, if you like.
Well, sometimes he misses the dunk, though.
Against the Knicks, he missed it.
Remember, yeah. Was it one time where he dunked it? Was that him and threw it over the rim into somebody, basically?
No, I do remember that. Who was that?
Who was that? That was Vic, right? Then Vic
missed the dunk. Yeah, it was. It was like a good pass. The shot didn't go in, but it was like a good pass, yeah.
But no,
revenge game, you're right.
Overall, they should beat this Mavs team because they are better than this Mavs team in terms of, I don't know, 1-9. I mean, the Mavs just, they have Luka, who's kind of having this rookie year, but, you know, again, his shooting percentage is not great. He's not just having like this good, what's it, high volume shoot rookie year, kind of like Mitchell in a sense.
Yeah, he's a good player. That's
yeah, I mean, it's going to be a good player, but he's just
Mitchell.
Sort of,
Mitchell is a great comparison.
Yeah, that's how I view him this year. And
in terms of like narrative, yeah.
He's Mitchell without Rudy Gobert. I mean, he's got DeAndre Jordan instead.
And so that, yeah, and as has been pointed out by Zach Lowe many times, DeAndre has become a shell of himself at best as a defender this year.
And that's where the Pacers will probably exploit this team the most is that they'll play a lot of Turner or even Sabonis if Turner gets a foul trouble, which or something like that, where they can just stretch the floor out or they can post him up or whatever they need to do and they can just kind of win those.
Yeah, the Mavs give up a ton of 2-point makes because of DeAndre.
I would put DeAndre Jordan in every single pick and roll.
I would too. Make him move, make him do stuff. He used to be really good at defending them. That made the Clippers like really good, but that is no longer the case.
No, remember then Steph and who did they, was it Barnes maybe who ran the pick and roll against him a bunch of his Clippers and that's where he got exposed. That
killed
most.
Everybody.
I know, but that's where he like kind of faded off because he couldn't quite get to that next like that top level. I mean, that was like elite, like NBA champion level. He couldn't get there.
But you were right. They do the big drop off is after their top guys. You know, all of a sudden you got like Dorian Finney-Smith is playing half the game for them, and Maxi Kleber is playing almost half the game for them, and Dwight Powell is actually pretty good, but he's also playing a lot of the game for them. It's like.
Dirk's still playing too, right?
Huh?
Dirk's still playing minutes.
Dirk is now back. Dirk is awesome because he's Dirk, and Dirk is shooting under 30% this year. Dirk is not very.
It will be Dirk's last time at Banker's Life.
It will. That'll be cool.
So I wonder the honor.
Dirk's effectiveness is gone, but Dirk is super awesome.
Like, I wonder if the Pacers will actually do some kind of honoring thing.
I hope so. He's one of my they don't know if it's his last game.
Oh, true. He doesn't want the final tour, right? Like D-Wade.
Like Wade will get something because him and Vic are tight too, but I don't know.
Oh, man. If D-Wade shows up, they should just boo him. I would just boo him. Screw D-Wade. I know. Don't honor D-Wade. He's been a nemesis.
But him and Vic are so tight and like kind of similar. I mean,
but D-Wade need Paul George in the head of the playoff game.
I know. On purpose. I like Wade. I like Wade. I get why people don't like Wade, but I like Wade.
I mean, as a Pacer fan, you should not like D-Wade. As a player fan, you can like D-Wade.
Understood.
But if you're a Pacers fan, you should not like D-Wade. You should just be booing the idea of that.
Yeah. Okay. I'll back up and start that.
The bench.
The bench. Yes. Dirk being a part of it too does not help them because he's so slow. I look forward to watching him, but yeah, they don't have what we can see is my pre-draft boy Jalen Brunson going off.
Oh, that could that could be something, I guess. I think Aaron Holiday has proven that he's a better pick than Jalen Brunson.
Yes, he has. I have no doubt that I was wrong right there. That was very clearly right of you.
And that is why they're NBA scouts. And then
that is why they are NBA scouts. And I post a podcast. Adam, very funny.
All right, sorry that hurt. That stung a little too much.
Digging deep. That is all for today's show.
So what I was gonna say is the Mavs. So the Pacers' strength of schedule has been so easy so far this year because they haven't really played a heavy West schedule yet, I guess. Whereas a lot of like teams that have records that would add to the strength of schedule, but imagine one of these teams where. They are 20-22, but they started off so well that I don't – right? They had a huge, like, good start, and they've kind of fallen off of late. Yep. So I'm not sure – you kind of hit them at the right time, I guess, is the right way to put it.
Yeah, they have 5 wins in their last like 18 games or something. I don't know if that's right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. They have 5 wins in the last 16 games. That was close. Okay. So that's not great. They are – something has fallen off with them. I don't know exactly what it is. But they're just – I think they were just shooting hot.
Yeah, and want to know a really good stat that's probably in addition to this game?
Yes, I would love to.
4 of 18 on the road.
The Mavs?
Are 4 and 18 on the road.
That's bad.
Yeah, that's really bad.
So, Butchers, you can go first since I went first the first two times.
Luka or Harrison Barnes. So
yep, I was going to pick whoever you didn't pick in that group.
Yeah, so it's those two guys. I still like Harrison Barnes as a trade option personally, but I don't know. We'll see how he plays.
Well, I was going to pick. If he wasn't hurt, I would probably have picked JJ Barea just because he's so crafty and quick. Like he makes he can make any second unit of just like 5-4 other dudes work somehow.
I feel like Corey Joseph is like the perfect guy to guard him though.
That's true. If he's not going to play, so it doesn't matter. Yeah,
I know, but I'm just thinking like Corey's the kind of guy who like would just stick with him and be able to just right. kind of hang with him.
You're right.
And
that's true.
All that stuff.
I'm sad. No more JJ Dirk picking whatever so that they did so well for millions of years.
That 2011 team was nasty.
So awesome. Just so many like everybody likes these dudes kind of players on one team.
Boy, and everybody hit LeBron too, so that helped.
Yeah, so DeAndre stinks, so it could be a good game. We've had 3 games where I think Sabonis could have a good game. It could be a big Sabonis week, let's just say that. But also, he does not defend away from the rim at all, so if Turner plays, which he should be ready by then, he could have a great game. Dennis Smith is a terrible defender, so anyone who Dennis Smith is guarding could have a good game.
Yeah, I think this is probably a 5 to 8 point win.
Yeah, Dallas is fine. I think the Pacers will win, though.
I think they'll win.
Hopefully they smoke them because they're on a back-to-back in this one.
Yeah, my back-to-back stats have now fallen off because I've lost a bunch in the second night. So,
well, someone just wrote about it for 8.9 seconds.
What are the stats then?
I am.
All right. Well, I'll read some Hornets stuff real quick. So the Hornets are 13th in offense, 19th in defense. They are 19-23, which is 8th in the Eastern Conference. They are competing for that very, very last spot in the.
What did I see? The Hornets. The Hornets have had like every 500 record from like 5-5, 6-6, 7, like all the way up to 18-18, except for 12-12. You know, they like win one, lose one all the time.
Yeah. The Hornets, which is probably going to be the reason. Vic is not a starter for the All-Star team. Is Kemba Walker has been incredible this year. Actually, his shooting numbers are percentage-wise pretty similar to Vic's, except he has a better free throw percentage. But he obviously is taking 19, he's taking 20 shots a game versus 16. He's 25 points a game, 5 assists, 4 rebounds on a 43.4 and 35.5 shooting split.
Yeah, he is insane. I mean, he's dropped off a ton since like he was scorched earth at the beginning of the year, just killing everybody. But he's still been very good.
But I mean, his shooting splits are literally almost identical to Vic's.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just 4 more shots per game, which is how he gets 25 points versus 20.
Right.
So maybe Vic. Well, no, but Vic missed like 8 games or 11 games, so that's why Kemba's going to be a starter in the All-Star game ultimately.
Yeah, and yeah, I think he deserves it more for being honest.
And I think the fans like him. I think Kemba's having more of a fan favorite season.
Yeah, he'll get it. It is what it is. Charlotte never turns the ball over. They are first in the league in not turning it over. Unfortunately, they just like aren't so like outside of Kemba, no one can really score for them. So having all those extra possessions is nice. It keeps them in games that they shouldn't always be in, but they just can't finish enough possessions to really blow you away. Although we did see when they are hot, when the Pacers played them last time, 3rd game in 4 nights or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was. They were on the road. When they do hit their shots, because they never turned it over, they can have a pretty good offense because they smoked them that time.
Yeah, I think that score was 121 or 131.
I am scrolling up until I find it. 127.
So split the difference right down the middle.
Right between what you just said.
Remember, they gave 149 of them last year. So
141. God, the damn Burke.
No, 149 last year.
Was it really that high? It was a lot. I
swear it was 149.
It was a lot. You're not kidding. Yeah, they just made a lot of shots. They shot a 62% from 3 in that game. That's insane. So when they don't turn the ball over and they make that many threes, yeah, they're going to win. Game over.
Yeah, so they've only played them once, right? But they do play them 4 times this year.
Yep. Yeah, outside of Kemba, though, they're just kind of hoping Cody Zeller can set good screens and get guys open. Every single one of their starters.
I'm actually wrong. They only play Charlotte 3 times this year.
Oh, dang. Correct.
I already missed that.
Yeah, Tony Parker's been giving them some good stuff off the bench. Miles Bridges is an awesome rookie. Malik Monk's not terrible like he was last year. They're like an okay team. I don't think anyone on their team is bad. I don't think anyone on their team besides Kemba is super good. They are what they are.
Yeah, this could theoretically be a matchup for them in the Pacers, the playoffs. I mean, I can see the
3-6 series, right?
3-6 or 2-7 possibly.
Here's another thing. Vic did not play the first time.
Yeah.
Tariq actually was okay. But
didn't Turner miss the game too?
No, he played.
What was the one he missed the next game then?
Maybe. I don't remember.
No, are you sure Turner played the first time?
I am 100% sure.
Okay. Turner missed one game that week. I
know. Yes, the Spurs game.
Okay. So did he get hurt in this game then, or was it after the gaming thing?
I do not remember.
Okay. Yeah, that was a weird week. I'm trying to remember that week now. Yeah. So that's kind of a blur.
It was Thanksgiving time. It was all kind of happening so fast.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah.
You know, even if they shoot 40% from three, right, they make like 14 or 13. I can't do that math quickly. Like 13. So that's five less. There's 15 points, and the Pacers lost by 18. So there's a lot of it right there. They shot a ridiculously good percentage from three.
Yeah, the Pacers to play better perimeter D against this team.
It's not like they were actually like just like that. Like the Pacers were clearly a step slow, but it was also like a scheduling thing, if I remember correctly. They had a bunch of games.
This one again. We're back to back.
It is a back to back.
The one thing though, it is at home. It is the third game of four nights, but it is a home game. So
yeah, that's true. Last one was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Last one was their fourth and sixth night, which isn't super bad, but it's still hard.
But I mean, you have to remember they're being at home for this stretch should be a benefit at least.
That's true. No traveling.
And I don't know. I wonder if there's some kind of extra motivation to go undefeated on this 5-game homestand. Like we should go 5-0 at home in this stand, and we should push ourselves to 33 wins or whatever.
Nice. Cody Zeller won't play. I completely skipped over that.
Yeah, Zeller and Parker, obviously.
Parker won't play?
Parker listed. Well, sorry, he didn't play.
He will play. He's out for rest.
Oh, was he out for rest? Okay, I missed that. I read the Zeller injury for him. So you're right. He will
play. They are also on a back-to-back, Adam.
Oh, really?
And they're traveling from Charlotte to Indy. Yeah.
No, so never mind. This might actually not be a scheduling loss then.
There we go. That helps.
See, they should do that in the NBA. Make every team that plays in a back-to-back play another team in a back-to-back. Then it becomes
fair. No, that would be a hideous games.
But then it makes it more fair, right?
I know. But that just
and don't have back-to-back. So just
I know. That would be the ideal answer. I hate back-to-backs too, but don't make them worse.
Have how many back-to-backs there a year? Like what, 12? You have played 10 to 12, right?
12 to 16. I think the Pacers have 15 this year.
Right. I think it used to be like they were 15 and schedule back 2 weeks.
So they're starting Bismack Biyombo now. That's where the Hornets season has gotten to.
Man. That's bad.
Yeah, they have some tough post injuries. So, yeah, if they're on a back-to-back, no problem for the Pacers. Kemba's clear the butcher. We're done.
This should actually be the perfect game for the Pacers then if they're both in back-to-backs because the three-point shooting should be down for them.
Yes.
Hornets.
Tired legs.
Yeah, now that makes me more excited. I think now they'll win this game. Now I'm more confident. I thought I had it as a loss, to be honest, in my mind.
I would have, too, if they weren't on a back-to-back. Something about the Hornets I just like, but not on a back-to-back.
Somehow they're going to lose by 20 still. But
dude, we get Hornets games wrong every time. The Dan Burke game was like the biggest mark against me on my resume of predictions ever.
That game was so bad. I was thinking, I turned it on. And Nick Batum had 19 in the first quarter, and I thought, oh, God. And then it reminded me of
He did not miss.
When they played the Pistons in that same first quarter, they have like 41 to Tobias Harris. I remember they had 49 in the first quarter. The Hornets didn't.
I'm trying to find that game on their schedule.
I think it was last March or February.
No, I think it was – was it that late in the year?
It was a pretty late game in the year.
I don't remember it being that late in the year. Maybe it is, though. I can't find it. So.
All right, let me find it real quick.
I trust you to find it very quickly. I swear it was like January.
They lost. Sorry. I guess it wasn't 149. I was
133.
133 to 126, and it was in February 2nd.
133.
So maybe it was they gave up 49 in the first. Yeah, they got 49 in the first quarter.
That's right, because Nick Batum. Yeah, okay. All right.
Nick Batum in this game had
31 points.
He went in an offensive rating of 159. Not that it means anything per game, those kind of advanced stats, but that's really good.
Jeremy Lamb had 159 also. Travion Graham played 15 minutes and a 182 offensive rating.
Yeah, Kemba had 41. They just had a shot at winning this game at one point. They tied at like 88.
Goodness gracious. They just, wow.
The Pacers in the fourth, if I remember right, in the third quarter tied the game up and then they just lost it.
Just did not win. The effort it takes to come back from that far.
No, but they had a shot. They had actually tied it.
Yeah.
Up.
No, I mean, like, they got all the effort to tie it.
Yeah. I see what you mean.
Yeah, we just, that was a big mark on the blemish for me. Oh, Dan Burke, sweet. It'll be like 100 to 90. Nope, 133, 126. Brutal, brutal, brutal.
Kind of like all the games this week almost.
That's true. All right. Yeah, official predictions for the week. I know I said individually I feel like they're going to win them all, but holistically, it's hard for me to say they're going to go undefeated. So I'll go 3-1.
Yeah, same. I think did I say they beat Philly? I'm not sure I said they beat Philly. I don't remember now.
I think in order, most likely losses from most likely to least likely, I'll go most likely Philly, second most Charlotte, third most Dallas, last Suns.
And they're going to lose to the Suns, of course. I agree. Everything you just said there, and they'll somehow lose to the Suns, and then they'll beat the rest of the team the rest of the week.
Welcome into the Locked On Dumbass Predictions podcast where we
Well, for a while we reverse jinxed them, right? Like we
That's
said,
true. We did.
What were they, 500 when we did that podcast with Caitlin and Whitney, and then they were
13-10.
They were 13-10, and then the next thing we know, they were 21-12.
They were 13-10, and now they're up to 28-14. They have 4 losses and 15 wins since then. It's crazy.
They've been real. I mean, always I think this team has a shot at winning the East this year is because they don't lose. I mean, they lose very rarely stupid games. They beat every bad team. They beat every even average team, and then they lose to the good teams. And they beat them a couple times. They get enough of those home wins against Milwaukee and Philly and Boston and Toronto, then they should be good to go.
I agree.
You know, if you lose every road game to say Boston, Philly, Milwaukee, Toronto, that's and maybe then you're gonna lose at Houston, at Golden State, let's say like that. You know, I don't know. They should be able to get to 50 wins.
The Pacers could have prime MJ, prime LeBron, prime Kareem, and they would lose in Toronto. they just cannot win in Toronto.
So actually, I wanted to ask you this because right now, do you think they win 50 games?
That's right at where I think they're going to end up, right around there.
Right. So your prediction before the season, the same as mine, 45, right? We about 45, 47. 45,
yeah. We said right at last. We both said 48. Didn't we say the same as last year?
Did we say 48? I thought we said right under that, but I don't remember.
I honestly thought we both said 48.
Someone's going to remember it. He's going to tweet us, but I don't.
Please do if you remember.
But yeah. But I think now they're more on pace for 50 to 52, if I had to guess.
Yep. Me too.
I would be surprised if they don't end up with 50 wins, but then they'll probably, we have to assume they'll hit some rough patch at some point, right?
So the thing is they close out with a hard schedule, but teams play the second half differently when they know what they're angling for, whether it be tanking a certain seed, stuff
like
that.
But the problem is the West doesn't unclump. They're gonna get a lot of tough West games.
The West will not unclump. Done. That's done.
Well, no, but if 1-8 or 1-10 are all the same record, you're going to see Golden State still trying in March. Classic Golden State didn't try in March. They didn't bring Step back. They didn't play Durant, I think, last time.
They didn't have any of the stars, right? They only had Clay? Something like that?
I think so. For one of the games. I think Durant played another one of them, but I think the one in Golden State that was that way. But then, and then assuming if they're up there,
Here's my counterpoint. They're already done with Houston. They're already done with Utah. Already done with the Kings. Those teams are all pretty good.
But they haven't played Denver yet once or Golden State once.
No, I don't. I think they match up fine with Denver. They already played Mini once with Butler. Now they're worse. They've gotten a lot of they did the Lakers once. They've already gotten a lot of the hard ones done. They did the Spurs twice already.
Let me look up strength of schedule stat real quick on ESPN.
I think it's still hard, but the Thunder, I don't think they have any of the really good teams twice anymore.
But I feel like they played the Bulls all the way through now?
No, they have one more Bulls.
I feel like they played all the – I guess they – right now
– they have one more Bulls and one more Cavs.
So if you take strength of schedule on ESPN, I don't know how good this data is. They rank last. They played the easiest schedule so far.
Hey, I love it.
I mean, I don't know.
Is Toronto, Boston, and Philly also pretty close to the bottom?
Philly is 27.
Yeah, all the good teams in the East who don't have to play themselves.
Boston 24, Milwaukee 20.
Exactly. So all the good teams in the East who cannot play themselves are going to be down there.
You can probably guess.
Hardest schedule is Phoenix, right?
Well, no, Utah is it right now, but Phoenix is second.
Yeah, okay, exactly.
I mean, I think the first,
it's not though. Jazz, though.
So what do you think the top East team? What number do you think they're at, and what team do you think it is?
The hardest East team schedule?
Yeah. What ranking do you think it's at?
7, 8.
It's 11. And it's two teams in the East are tied for it. Who do you think?
Gosh. Well, one's got to be the Knicks or the Hawks or the Cavs.
Yeah. The Knicks are one. What's the other one?
Is it someone kind of good? Is it Orlando? I don't know.
No, it's a crappy team. We just said it. Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So there's some loaded stuff in strength of schedule, but there is some validity to it.
But Toronto has the 12th hardest schedule, or 14th hardest schedule, it says. And
yeah, they're really good.
So they're really, I mean.
They're just really good.
But I guess, the goal is the 2 seed, right? If you're the 2 seed, you can, I think they're the 2 seed, they could win two playoff rounds because they get that home second round series.
Avoid the 4-5 and then let it ride, baby.
Yeah, I mean, if they're we're both in agreement, they're a top three seed, they're winning a first round game. Or at least if they don't, make Millen should be fired, they don't win a first round series.
I like that assessment. I'm with you there.
I think I said that yesterday on yesterday's podcast. I said
they're top three. They did good in the playoffs last year besides one Victor Oladipo blunder, and it was just the biggest blunder ever.
No, and if they lost in a seven game series in the 4-5 matchup, I think he still deserves to be the coach. But if they get to a 3-6 and lose to a team in the first round, he deserves to get canned. I mean, that's the way I would put it.
Wow, what a dark ending to an hour long show.
Hour and a half. I think hour and 10 minutes now.
No, your technology flub has made it like.
Oh, that's right. I did. We 10 minutes. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to end so dark. I'm just.
That's okay.
I think they have a shot at the top.
What are you writing about this week? Anything?
What was I going to write about? I had a topic in mind. I said it on the show and then I forgot it already.
We talked about one of mine on the show, actually. You didn't even know it.
I was going to do Vic. I haven't decided yet, I guess.
I'm doing Vic passing more as one of mine. I'm doing.
I know what I was going to do. I was probably going to do. Like a playoff rotation thing or like top seven, you know, expendable kind of like what you need to succeed in the playoffs.
I'm doing a trade deadline primer. I'm going deep on Vic and I'm going deep on McDermott.
That's fair. So
it's going to be fun.
Would you be in favor of any trade of trading McDermott in the trade deadline? Like, is there the right trade, but where are you at? Like 50-50, 75?
I don't know what the value of him even is. I have no idea.
I mean, he's got a pretty cheap contract
neutral probably. Right?
He's even, a cheap contract. Yeah.
He's probably just salary flotsam basically.
Well, and we both agree if he's played with the right point guard, he probably puts up decent stats, right? No?
I don't know.
He's not having
I like Doug McDermott. I don't know what other teams think of Doug McDermott.
That's fair. But offensively, he's actually having a pretty decent year.
Remember what tradespeople who are going to throw some crazy crap at me over the next month. It's not what our team thinks of the value of players. It's what other teams
think. Oh, right. If you have a trade, just – tweet at TEASTNBA. I saw somebody do that, but it's TEASTNBA Twitter, as Tony's Twitter, tweet all trades of them.
I'm going to delete my account in February.
You can't do that. You have like 3,000 followers.
I'm going to suspend myself. I don't know.
How many followers do you have now? Like 3,000?
2980 or something like that. I'm right below 3,000.
You can't delete your Twitter account. You're too popular.
Whatever. I'm not popular. I'm a stretch. All right. That's where you can follow me on Twitter. Podcast is at Locked On Pacers. Adam is at Friedman Adam 5. Adam's the weekend show guy. So, Adam, say goodbye till Friday.
Oh, yeah. Well, this Friday should be nice. There'll be two games to preview. And I don't know.
That's true. Your schedule's pretty easy this week, actually.
And I think on the weekend, I'll probably do a breakdown of the Saturday game, maybe an evergreen topic on this weekend again.
Bam. All
right. This was harder because there was no games this weekend, which is kind of nice. It's nice to have a weekend off.
We got a guest for the Suns, and then I don't know what I'll do for the Sixers. I'll figure something out. It'll be a good time. So stay tuned for that. Thank you all for tuning in to this lovely hour-long weekly show. We love doing these. We love when you guys listen to them. Time to shift your attention to basketball since football's over. Sad, but it is what it is. Thank you for tuning in, and have a great rest of your day.